Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Laura Levine on Shiloha Radio in Anacortes, Washington. And today is week 6 of our 7-week series of relationship wisdom with Al Chertle. Next week, we're going to be headed straight into vintage love, and that's going to conclude our wonderful series that we've had. 7 weeks of intensive looking at skills, everything that happens when two people get together and want to be well together. And Al has guided us through many different situations and many different skills and many different subconscious and conscious behaviors, and it's been really great. So this week we're going to talk about communication and boundaries, which is an important part of any relationship with anyone, whether it's your kids, your partner, your boss, your employees, your neighbor. So if you go onto Al's site at alturtlecounseling.com or my site, lauralevine.com, you will find a lot of information that Al has posted, some screencasts, some PowerPoint presentation, just from last week too. A lot of really great aids to learning. But today we're live, and hi, Al.
Hello, hello, hello.
I hear you so well.
Oh, it's much better. I took my microphone and boiled it in water.
Isn't that funny? I was just threatening to do that to my computer. I mean, literally, I really said, I think I'm going to boil this sucker. That's really funny, but I don't think I will today. But man, oh man. Yeah, you sound great. You sound great. So, communications and boundaries.
Okay. Actually, I was thinking we're shifting from the principles to skills.
Okay.
And so we're going from abstract concepts to the skills that display those abstract concepts.
And but you've given us skills all along, though.
Oh, I've been talking about them all along. But really, today we're going to pay attention. I'm going to let you kind of push me a little bit on how do you display the skills of autonomy or the skills of diversity or the skills, how do you display them in communication? Because for most of us, it's in communication. And same thing with boundaries. It's in communication that these things surface. And you learn them by practicing them with a partner and by messing it up. And then coming back and say, how could we say that better? How could I do it better? So today I'm going to stay with skills. There are a couple people have asked questions, and I thought, well, that's good to look at those things at the skill level. And I published some screencasts of how I teach mirroring. I published that. I've never published it before. I did create the PowerPoint, but I've never attached the audio to it. So
yeah, it's great. I think it's just great, especially for people who are visual. You know, hearing us is one thing, and then now they have this extra tool that they can look back on, and it's just very, very helpful. It makes the whole thing very complete.
Yep. It's kind of like, how do you keep? Oh, I want to pick up two things. This is from the news.
Okay.
Listen to an advertisement for a MSNBC morning program this morning called Morning Joe. And as I listened to it, the advertisement, the guy, Joe, whatever his name is, said that the critical thing about his way of doing things is that you respect all the points of view and you tell people that you are going to respect their point of view, especially when they're different. And I thought, dialogue, which is what I focus on enormously, is spreading across the world. It's not just in couples. It surfaces in couples because of the intensity and the frequency of the connection. But it's going on the international level, on the national level, it's spreading.
You can't avoid dialogue. It's just a matter of whether you do good dialogue or bad dialogue, or effective dialogue or not effective dialogue. But, I mean, we can't avoid it. We have dialogue everywhere, all the time, right?
Well, it depends upon your use of the word dialogue. If I use the word dialogue to be any conversation where both people's or all people's points of view are respected, and I turn on Fox News, I won't see much dialogue.
Yeah, right. Okay, conversation versus dialogue.
It's a rare event. In the last probably 8 years, our international politics was rarely dialogical. It was more, we'll tell you what to do. And the same thing's true in relationships. What I found is that a relationship that stays dialogical, you're basically maintaining respect for everyone's point of view in that relationship.
As opposed to master talk.
As opposed to master talk, which is the challenge, of course, is what do you do? How do you stay dialogical when the person you're talking to has switched over out of dialogue into, and I just use the word master talk because it's the easiest way to describe the opposite of dialogue. It's easy to recognize and you can see it. And it's basically the conversation style of the power struggle and of bullies.
Right.
So it's, and you and I can do it right here. We could do it quite easily because how do you keep? And I'm asking that as a question, but it's really the skill, my skill at managing a space that you and I are in, and anyone in the audience is in, that respects people who disagree, and sending and it's kind of like important. Here's a skill. When you state your opinion, you can state it more strongly if, as a tagline, you remind everyone that you know people disagree. I can.
Yeah, because right away when you do that, you calm any potential lizard that might rear its head.
Exactly. And the lizards, the way I look at it, is we're trying to always keep that lizard calm. In myself and in the person, people around me. I want to keep it calm. Let's see if we can look at some things about boundaries. And Laura, you just provoke me if you can. Any direction you want to go on this communication.
Because, now, what do you mean by that?
Well, just say anything or ask any question that kind of will get me going on some area. I'm used to the idea that people, couples particularly, but most everybody, they really do want to get along. They want vintage love, but they get distracted from getting there by the way they talk. So
you want me to provoke you? You want me to tell you something that would be easy to get triggered by?
Sure. Or just take some of the questions that people have asked and throw them at me or whatever.
Okay.
Just so I can, you know, if you look at this, if you play back this conversation, what you'll see is when Laura says something to me, my first goal is to make sure that whatever I do next, it gives Laura the impression that I heard her.
Yeah, and you're really good at that even by email. I mean, I was looking through emails you've sent me. You're very good at that. I remember one time doing something, I think calling something else, and you said, I don't know, you were just really good. Like, I think you said, now give me give me a little bit of your perspective as to why you called this that, where really I just screwed up is what happened, but they were, you were just interested in knowing where I was coming from. Okay, so let's say, okay, I'm drawing a blank here. So once we're done with this series, what do you think people are going to do with it? I'm worried that people are not going to know what to do next.
Okay, you're worried about not knowing what to do next. As though there is something that needs to be done next and you don't know what it is.
Right, that's right.
And you might feel like a failure. You might.
Mm-hmm.
Next. And so I hear that. Actually, with this area of communication or your own communication, I'd just love to hear anything that you've got that you would like to throw at me, where you've had trouble communicating, or where other people have, any thoughts you've got. And I'll take anything. In fact, when I'm teaching that thing, I often tell a partner in the very first session, partner A, you say something on, let's say, share something that your partner did that you appreciate. And then I turn to the other person and I say, and your job is to repeat back to them anything, whatever the hell they say. Because mirroring is basically a tool that allows you to not worry, to stay relaxed, your lizard to stay relaxed as
you're
talking at you.
And you
don't worry.
So, you know what? We have a caller. Let's see if someone will have a question they can ask you that we can role play that, okay?
Sure. Why not?
Okay, so hold on.
That's fun.
Hi, you're on the air. Who am I talking with? Oh, you're crinkly. Hello, this is Laura. Can you hear me?
I hear crackly.
Okay. Well, we're going to hang up then. But didn't work out. I don't know. It's someone in your area code, 208.
Maybe that's me.
699. Well, I can't give a phone number on the air, but they went away.
Do that.
Okay. All right. So, okay, well, let's work with this. So I just got an email from one of our listeners saying that you sound just as faint as you did last time, audible but could use remastering. So, you know, that's so frustrating because I hear you very well, and your mic is a new mic since you've boiled the old one, and that's just frustrating to me.
Yes, it is frustrating to you. I hear that. It's frustrating to me too. And I've got new mics on order, but they won't come in till Thursday. But I will try to talk louder, but I will also use that method of putting out this afterwards with large volume on it, with balancing that out.
Okay, so what did you do here? You validated that you heard me.
Yes.
And you told me that it was annoying to you as well.
Yes.
And you showed me that you heard my frustration by telling me that there was a solution coming.
Right. Exactly. I did all that stuff, but basically it proved to you that I was listening to you and
yes.
concerned. And it actually went further. I kind of said, not only do I hear you and I'm concerned, but it's important and I'm going to do something about it, which is letting you know that your point of view is considered by me and I'm understanding it. So the first thing, the communication, I always look at it, two parts of communication, three parts, I don't know how many parts, 2,000. But the first thing is to develop a habit of making whoever speaks to you feel heard. Heard, H-E-A-R-D.
Oh, yeah, I got that.
That's your first concern. And if you can't understand them, you still can make them feel heard. If they didn't give you...
Yeah, and that's an important distinction that you made last week, is the idea that you don't have to understand someone to hear them.
Frequently, you can't understand them. But you can make them feel like you're listening and that you're interested to hear more.
Yeah.
So
okay, let's try this caller again, see if we have better luck, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air. Can you hear us? Area code 208. I have you on the air with us.
I don't know who that is.
Well,
I don't know.
Can you hear us? Nope, they hung up. Okay, well, I don't know. We won't pick them up again. It was worth a shot. Woo! So crinkly. Are you there, Al? Al, are you there? No way. We lost Al. Al, how can we do dialoguing if I'm alone? Did this really happen? Can you hear me? Well, I bet he's going to call back. I show him as being on the air, but Al, I can't hear you. So call back, hang up and call back. And we'll go back to our talk about, isn't that just the greatest thing that could happen on a show on communication? That we have miscommunication, technological miscommunication. Al, are you back? Al, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You disappeared.
Well, what I got was a busy signal that just went on and on and on.
Oh, well, isn't that just perfect for communication?
That's really frustrating. What the?
No, it's great for a show on communication. I think it's great. Oh, okay, so I didn't do it well at all. You told me you were frustrated, and I said, no, it's great.
Well,
okay, so let me do it. Let me practice. So, yeah, so I can hear that you're really frustrated.
There you go.
And it's frustrating for me, too, to tell you the truth. And we're going to make it to the other side of this.
Yeah. And I listened to a recent conversation between several people. One person said they were really upset. The other person responded by saying, well, I didn't cause that.
Right.
Well, the transaction right there was, number one, invalidating to the first person. In other words, the second person didn't understand why the first person was upset, but immediately jumped in to say, I didn't do it, which is really irrelevant, but it is to say, let's now listen to the second person.
Yeah. And well, that has a lot to do with taking things personally and making assumptions.
Well, it may have to do that, and I hear that, to jumping, taking it personally and jumping to assumptions. But at the same time, it's very simple that the second person is saying, I've heard what you said, and now I'm going to talk on top of you. And you really
want
to go back and say, I've heard what you've said. Do you have more to say? It's really a bound, and so this also has to do with boundaries. My wife, God bless her, when I interrupt her, she just says, I'm not finished, and reminds me that I haven't listened all the way through to what she's trying to say. And that's very helpful for me, because I know how to interrupt really easily.
Yeah, I do too, I'm afraid. And there is, I read a paper that you wrote that goes even a step further and says that when someone is sharing whatever they have to share and you've made a commitment not to interrupt and then they stop talking, then you wonder, if I start talking now, am I going to get in the way of what they were going to say or not? And what you suggest is to say, please tell me more about this.
Yeah, yeah. You basically, I think that it's so easy to interrupt someone without knowing you're interrupting them. You don't know if they're finished talking. And a lot of people wait to see if they'll be invited to continue. So developing the habit of please say more, or go on, or uh-huh, or that sends that signal of, wow, that's interesting, tell me more.
Okay, so what else? You have shared with me how you feel. I have validated that I've heard you.
Well, you've at least acknowledged you've heard me in a way that I believe it.
Okay.
Whether you validate or not, I use the word validation very, very carefully.
Okay, so I've acknowledged having heard you.
Yeah.
I've not interrupted you. I've encouraged you to go on. Now what comes next?
Well, the tricky thing is you have interrupted me. You've interrupted me to prove that you're listening. See, that what I've often taught is that not interrupting is wrong. Just blanket not interrupting. There are times when you interrupt and it's rude, and there are times when you interrupt and it's vital.
Okay.
Rude to not interrupt. You know, if you...
To give acknowledgement.
To give acknowledgement, one thing you do is you interrupt to acknowledge that you've heard what they've said and you've heard it accurately, and then you've invited them to continue. To pretend you're listening is profoundly rude. So you are interrupting for the sake of making communication work smoothly. So another example for my wife and I is that I'm bad at hard of hearing. And if she says something and I can't get her words, it is rude for me not to interrupt her at that moment and say, ooh, wait a minute till I'm closer so I can hear what you're saying.
Okay.
So there's places where it's rude to interrupt, and there are other places where it's rude to not interrupt. And mirroring teaches all of those.
Tell us a little bit about mirroring.
Well, mirroring, originally, you'll hear of mirroring anytime you get near to somebody who does imago therapy. Because mirroring is used, the term mirroring is a central thing to imago therapy. And imago means Harville Hendrix and Getting the Love You Want and those collection of books. So you'll hear of mirroring, and they teach it in a particular way. And Sandra and I took their teaching, because we learned it, and went quite a bit further and said, okay, what does mirroring do? And what we finally decided on is that mirroring is a teaching tool. It's not a goal. It's a teaching tool. And the purpose of mirroring is to train you in a skill. The skill is how to make people feel heard.
Okay.
The more you practice.
And again, here we are talking about people. So your partner, your kids, I know I keep bringing that up, but I think it's really important because there are people who are listening to us who have kids, little kids and teenagers or aging parents. And I have seen over the past few weeks how helpful this has been with some of our listeners with kids. So I just want to keep bringing that up and reminding people that you can use this with anyone.
Yeah, it's really appropriate. The term mirror, as far as I know, came from the study of what do you do with three-year-olds. When they run up to you and they start a conversation, and what is it? And they start a conversation and then they wait. And they're waiting for something. And it has to do with their brain development. That they're waiting for something, and what they're waiting for, we found out back in, as far as I know, back in the 50s and 40s, they're waiting to be mirrored.
And oh, interesting. Okay.
If they run up to you and they say, I'm a choo-choo train, and then they look up at you, and you notice they're waiting. What they're waiting
for. Of course, that's right.
It's you to say, so you're a choo-choo train. Tell me more. And if you do that to them, their brain just moves smoothly on during development. If you ignore them, or you interrupt them, or you correct them, it slows down their brain development.
Huh. So, Al, I wonder if this happens with teenagers, too, because I noticed that if my kids will come to me and say, oh, man, you know, I don't know, whatever, teacher so-and-so was a real pain in the butt today. And they will stop.
Yep, and they're waiting for something.
And they're waiting. So either you turn around and say, oh, nothing, or cool, or whatever, or you say, wow, so your teacher was a real pain in the butt, tell me more. And then you get a flow of thoughts, and you thought your teenager was so close-lipped, and really they're not. They're just, it's almost like they're checking the water to see, is it safe? Are you interested?
I think that's a good phrase. I like what you're saying. It's like they're checking the water. They're testing to see, are you somebody who's nice to talk to, or are you being a pain in the butt right now?
Exactly.
And so they send out a little bit. Somebody says, you're a bitch. And they're often testing the water. They're often testing to hear if you're saying, and the beautiful thing is to say, oh, you've gotten into thinking I'm a bitch. Tell me more about that. How'd you get there?
And I think for teenagers, they will use a shock factor for an extra dose of seeing if somebody's safe or not.
That's right. And if you say, you know, I'm used to the idea that, and this is where the lizard gets involved. If your kid won't talk to you, it's because they've experienced coming to you and they say something and you do something that scares their lizard.
Yep.
So they've learned that it's not safe to talk to you.
Even if it's just that you don't act interested. I mean, it doesn't have to be that you come out at them with a knife. It could just be that you say, oh, that's nice, honey, and turn around and do something else.
Yeah, exactly. And that'll send the message that you're not interested. And you don't say to them, gee, I've not got time for you right now. This would be boundaries, by the way. I'd love to hear what you're saying, but right now I've got to do this. Can we talk in 10 minutes? Now, you're still sending it safe at that point. But if you say, I don't have any time for you, they're basically saying, you, mom, dad, aren't really worth talking to because it scares my lizard when I come near.
So, and I like that boundary thing you just threw in there, because even between partners, that's a really big piece of information to give someone, to say, I can't talk right now and I'm interested in what you're saying. And can we make a date to talk in 10 minutes or tomorrow or tonight?
Sure. That works very smoothly, and everybody's lizard feels safe. Remember, you got to take care of your own lizard. And when you're dealing with a teenager, they can spend 24 hours thinking of ways to drive you crazy.
Yes.
And you've got to hold down a job or whatever it is, and you only have so much time for them. And that's true. You only have so much time for them. And what you're really doing is, I think, inviting them to go find someone else to talk to. But you want to be their guide in how to go about that.
Right.
And so it's really fun to work with teenagers. Mirroring really is a way, to me, of slowing down conversation, showing respect, and being thoughtful about what you're going to do in this situation.
But Al, do you do this? I mean, we're going to go through the whole mirroring process because there's more than just this one step. But do you do this? When do you decide to use the mirroring versus not? I mean, we can't be mirroring back and forth all the time, every bit of conversation, because then it becomes stilted, right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds really weird. Yeah.
So do you do this for... Do you choose when a topic is important enough to use mirroring, or how do you decide when to use it and when to not?
Well, I'll repeat what I've said before, because my sense is you didn't quite hear me. I didn't quite feel heard. Mirroring is a training tool. The result of mirroring is that you know how to make someone feel heard under any circumstance. But you don't use mirroring in every circumstance. You just do the hundreds of skills that mirroring teaches.
Ah, okay. I'm glad you said that again. Okay. Sorry, I didn't catch it the first time.
The goal is not to mirror. The goal is to learn those hundreds of skills. And mirroring teaches them all. So really, in a way of saying it is, in this circumstance, what does mirroring teach me to do? And then do that thing. In this circumstance where your kid is suddenly yelling, what does mirroring teach you to do? Well, it teaches you to know that when somebody yells, it's because they don't think they're going to be listened to. So this person who's yelling is saying, listen to me, please. And then your job is to say, okay, so how do I go about that? How do I go about making this person feel listened to? Or saying, you know, and you might have to say, okay, I hear you really need to be listened to right now, but I haven't got the time right now. I will do it in 15 minutes. And then they at least feel they don't have to yell. But if they yell a lot, It's because they don't think you're even willing to listen. The goal is, my thing is that mirroring, if you love it, you don't need it.
I get it. Okay. So it trains you to have your brain function in a way that it becomes second nature.
Yep, that's it, and that's exactly what it is. So now there's some circumstances when the only thing you can ever do is mirror. That's the thing you must do, or you will die.
Give me an example.
My favorite story is that my wife woke me up one time in the middle of the night. She woke me up by pinching off my nose and putting her hand over my mouth.
Okay.
And I woke up. She didn't do it tight enough to kill me. But it was, I woke up sputtering. My lizard woke me up, said, you're going to die. And I woke up and with some sort of statement of, wah. And what I remember her saying was, you pissed me off in one of my dreams.
No, this really happened?
Sure.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Now, the only thing you can do at that point that is rational is mirror. The only thing you can do, you want to make her feel heard. She said something. The tendency, of course, is to say, you crazy woman, what are you talking about? But that
would... Wow, it takes a certain level of, something to be able to go into mirroring when you've just been half killed in your sleep.
It just takes habit. You're in an emergency situation. This is exactly the same thing as trying to teach a fighter pilot what to do when they've suddenly got two enemies on their tail. It's the same thing. You're suddenly surprised when you're calm by something could be profoundly bizarre, and it's in the form of communication. So the first thing you do is you mirror. I often teach the phrase that if you don't know what to do when somebody speaks to you, mirror.
That's good. Okay, if you don't know what to do when somebody speaks to you, mirror. I love that.
It's so simple. I had a guy run up to me one time on the beach, yell at me at the top of his lungs, and hold some binoculars out to me. And he said, you must look at this. Well, that's a profoundly amazing sentence. I mean, I hear lots of profoundly amazing sentences out of Rush Limbaugh. But, this guy on the beach, he was saying, you must look at this. And I literally was startled. And I heard come out of my mouth the phrase, oh, you think I must look at something. And he looked at me and he yelled again, yes, you must look at this. And I kind of felt relaxed because the only thing you do with that is mirror. So I said, yeah, okay, you really think I need to look at something. And then he said, you're no fun. And I said, okay. So not only do you think I must look at something, but you've gotten into thinking that I'm not much fun. Well, he was trying to ridicule me by getting me to look with some binoculars at a very large woman, overweight woman, who'd lost the top of her bathing suit. And then he was going to mock me for being a peeping Tom.
Wow.
And I didn't play into his game. All I did is deal with this profound confrontation of his words by mirroring them. I took away all his threat and power and intention to ridicule just by mirroring.
Hmm.
Now, this is what you do when somebody throws something at you. You want to remain calm and relaxed, no matter whether your partner's gone nutso at the moment or whether it's a salesman who's trying to manipulate you, or a lawyer, or a policeman. Sometimes the only rational thing to do is just mirror back their words to them and say, well, tell me more about how you got to say that. Because they did. It's often a test. sometimes you don't know where it's coming from, but their mouth. So you want to calm things down. Now, the fact that I, in those two situations, I did it automatically is a result of working with my wife. Because the one who will say,
who tried to kill you in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You know, I have to share this little piece with you, which is not necessarily related, but it's just when you talk about that, that reminds me of the story where I had gone to sleep earlier than my kids, which, you know, doesn't happen very often. And that was a few years ago, so they were little. So I went to bed, fell asleep, you know, that nice first sleep that you get.
Oh, yeah. That's
and nice. Woke up.
Yeah.
And there was a face like half an inch from my nose. And I got so scared, I took my fist and punched that face.
Sure, sure.
And that was my son who had come to kiss me before he went to bed. I mean, he was like 10 years old. And I just punched the heck out of him. So we still laugh about this, you know, like every week we'll have a joke about that. But talk about the lizard being awakened, and there was nothing in me that went, oh, so you're interested in waking me up right now. Tell me more about that. I went, bam!
And
I don't think I've ever punched anybody since or before. No, but
it shows that you're capable of that.
Yes.
You know, lizards are capable of remarkable things. And you want to keep everybody's lizard moving in the direction of being relaxed. So when somebody's face is there, they're running the risk of getting punched.
Right.
From a person as calm and as gentle and as kind as you are when you're conscious and awake, you want to be careful with you when you're happy.
You're not kidding. Okay, so let's go through the process, the different steps. So first, I acknowledge you. Then what do you do?
Well, the first thing I do with mirroring is a four-step process.
Okay.
It's just a repeated four-step process. The first part is somebody says something. Somebody mirrors it back. The receiver mirrors it back. The sender then says, yep, you heard me, or no, you didn't.
Okay.
And the fourth step is an invitation to continue on that topic. And it's just, please say more about that, is the way I teach it in the first class, you know, when I'm teaching it. So that's mm-hmm. what I've got. Mm-hmm. I've got that in my slide presentation that I put on the website right now. And I will put
So let's do it real quick, you and me, okay?
Okay.
Can we do it?
Sure.
We've
been doing it all the way along. Let's do it formally.
Oh, yes, you're right. Okay. I'm the sender.
You're the sender.
So for somebody who wants to do it, I sure don't have very brilliant ideas of what to do.
You don't have brilliant ideas of what to do it, do you? Please say more.
Yeah, that's right. So you heard me. I really don't have very many ideas of how to do this.
You're saying, yeah, that's right, and you don't have really many ideas about how to do that. Please say more.
Well, I'm kind of stuck, but I think we went through the exercise.
And you're thinking you're a bit stuck, and you're laughing a little bit about it, but you think we've gone through the exercise. Could you say more?
Yeah, I think we've got it. I think we've got it. We've got it. Thank you for listening.
And you think we've got it. Do you have any more to say on that subject?
I think we're done.
You think we're done. At this point, because I've just done the process with you, I know now it's my turn to talk without interrupting you. You know, because you've gotten to a place where you stopped. The point is you want to be able to do that. Sometimes your partner doesn't believe you've heard them unless you've said their exact words. Sometimes they don't care. You have.
What do you mean?
Well, if they say, something that is very specific. They've said, you've ruined my life.
Oh, well, that's perfect, because I just have a case of a client right now who's doing just that.
That's a pretty powerful sentence. And if you
say
back to them, I've screwed up your life, they may say, no, you didn't hear me, because you didn't use the word ruined. And they need to hear the word ruined coming out of your mouth.
Okay, that's important.
You have to be willing to go to use the exact words they use. That doesn't mean you have to use the exact words, but you have to be willing to.
Okay, so speak their language.
If they say, no, you didn't hear me, you have to be willing to stop at that split second and say, well, say it again so I can get your exact words. That's a skill.
So where do you go from there? So for instance, I have this couple, this client couple,
sure.
who she believes that he has ruined her health.
Yeah.
So she says to him, you've ruined my health. And so the mirroring would say, you're telling me that I've ruined your health. Is that right? Yes, you've heard me. Tell me more about that. Well, you've ruined my health by doing this and doing this and doing that. Now what do we do next?
Well, you're wanting to continue the making that person feel heard, and you've got a lot of you messages coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So part of mirroring is learning how to take a you message and convert it into an I message.
Give me an example.
Well, if you say, you ruined my life, I need to convert that into as though you had said, I am now believing that you've ruined my life.
Right. Okay, got it.
So you have to add in to their sentence, which was just, you ruined my life. You've got to add in the phrase, I think I'm believing. And then reverse the direction by saying, so you're into believing that I've ruined your life. And at that point, you haven't changed anything. You've just made it more clear. And you've left room for you, the listener, to say, and I think that I'm doing loving things. You're allowing the room for the and to be inserted between their thought and your thought. Because when they say you ruined my life, that's master talk.
That's right.
And you want to convert that back to dialogue immediately. And
so that's what the mirroring does for those of you who are listening.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted. You're switching master talk into dialogue where things can happen as opposed to just one-way street when nothing happens.
Or into a battleground, or potential of arguing or a potential of hitting each other.
Right.
That hitting in the middle of the night when you wake someone up looking in their face.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible.
What you're doing is trying to develop a sense of boundaries between what it's the person you're with, between what they're thinking and they're believing and they're feeling and they remember, between that and what you're thinking, believing, remembering. You're trying to create a nice, comfortable place for both people's views of the world to coexist in the same space. And mirroring.
Well, then we end up with diversity, because by the time we've mirrored and dialogued, we get to the place that says, I see things this way and you see things that way, and what you see makes sense to you and what I see makes sense to me.
Yep. And let's share. Let's share those two things and have them both sitting in the same room comfortably. And the opposite is master talk, where you're signaling to someone that I can't tolerate that you have another point of view.
Right.
And you want to...
And that all goes back to the lizard, who's just petrified to have someone tell him another point of view.
So you want to talk and communicate in such a way that you're not threatened by their having a different point of view. I'm not threatened by that man yelling at me saying, you must do this. And I'm not threatened by my wife saying that I messed up her dreams. I'm really kind of just creating, immediately spreading the table for there to be room for her thoughts and my thoughts.
Yeah.
And hearing is just a way of training you to get into the habit of doing that. At least that's the way I see it.
Yeah.
And if you're mirroring in such a way that they feel awkward about it, then you haven't learned the tools well enough. The tools.
Now, what do you mean by awkward?
Well, let's say in a conversation, somebody says, "I hate you," and so you say, "Oh, so you hate me?" And they say, "Stop parroting me."
Oh, I see.
And you say, "Okay, you don't want me to repeat back what you're saying? Is that what you're saying?" And they say, "Yes," and you've just mirrored them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just mirrored them, but in a way they don't feel bothered by.
Well, it takes a certain level of grace and practice.
Eventually you begin to know when somebody speaks to you and you say, uh-huh. That's all you say.
Yeah.
You say nothing. That's what, and they're feeling heard. Or sometimes they'll test you to say, did you really hear me? And you say, well, what you said was, and then you repeat it back to them, and they say, ah, you did hear me.
Yeah, so even the piece that says, uh-huh, and you know, that's interesting. In French, we don't have that word. I really love that, uh-huh, uh-huh. It's so non-invasive. And so effective.
You learn end up learning an awful lot of non-invasive behaviors.
Right.
A lot of collegial, encouraging, and supportive behaviors. And it's very especially important when disagreement is large, when the size and of hugeness of disagreement is large. And so, Sandra and I think of it as you use mirroring when things get touchy. When you sense things are getting touchy, you kick over into a little tighter level of mirroring.
Yeah, then when I sense that your lizard is starting to get a little activated, then it's a good time to start using it.
And what I've also learned is if we use mirroring to tell whether our partner's lizard has gone nuts. Because if my partner, Sandra's lizard, has gone nuts, chances are she won't be able to hear me. She's into herself.
Yeah, okay.
So if I say, could you just say back what I said? She says no. Then probably the best thing to do is for me to be mirroring her and not worrying about asking her to mirror me. Because she may not be in a place to do it at that point.
Yeah.
You can mirror a baby, but you can't get a baby to mirror you.
Right.
Sometimes your client, sometimes the person you're talking to, isn't at a place to listen to you. How do you know that? Well, you ask them to mirror you. And if they say, I don't know what you just said, then you don't throw it away and get mad. You just say, okay, in this situation, it better be me mirroring you. Because you can always mirror them. You can mirror an infant. You know, the little baby's born. In fact, there's a cultural thing I learned from this is a fun story. Babies, the importance that a baby, when it first speaks, there's a phrase that comes from Guatemala, from the Mayans, that says that first yell of a baby contains all the messages that it ever wants to say for the rest of its life.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that.
The important thing is that it feel that those messages are received. So they, first of all, in that culture, I gather, this is what I've heard, that babies are born in the dark. They love the dark. They're in the dark. They don't want to be. So you basically, the birthing chamber is in some sort of little hut where it's real quiet. And a whole bunch of children are waiting outside. So that when the baby screams, the first time it's finally taking its breath and yelling, that those kids outside yell back.
Really?
Saying, we've heard you. We've heard you. We've heard your yell.
Oh, gosh, I love that story.
And so the idea is, it isn't a yell that goes into the darkness. It goes into somebody responding back.
Wow.
So, joyously, that first yell, and the baby goes, yow! And everyone outside goes, oh, wow, yow!
And the baby says,
I'm not alone. There are people there. That's a beautiful little story.
It's a beautiful...
It also helps the doctor and the mother not to have to yell.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It's that thing. We naturally do it with a little baby, and the baby goes, goo-goo, and we typically go, cuckoo back.
Right.
Mirroring.
Yeah, and babies will mirror at you too, you know, when you make, if you stick your tongue out, they'll do it a little bit. So that brings up to me I was reading on your site something someone posted. I think his name is Tim or Tom. Is it Tim or Tom? It's Tim. And I just love what he wrote, and he speaks about advice, and I'm going to read just a few sentences that he writes here, because I think that they work really well with validation and the idea of mirroring. He says, advice has its time and place, but it should be the exception rather than the rule. advice should be ripped from our hands instead of being spewed upon someone who never requested it. Even when people ask us for advice or wisdom, most often I don't think they're really seeking either one. They're seeking validation. They're looking for someone to answer the door so they can come in from the cold.
Yes.
Beautiful. That's great, right?
Wasn't his writing beautiful?
Oh, beautiful.
I love that phrase.
I love that phrase.
Somebody does say to me, what should I do? And what they really want at that point is for me to say, wow, what a problem. I hear you're really wondering what to do.
What are you
thinking about? So I'm really mirroring them rather than saying, okay, I'll tell you what to do.
Let me be the master. Yeah, so it's a partnering process. Even says in here, Tim says, before long, your behavior starts to change. You'll come to know the true meaning of freedom simply because you're not burdened with the obligation of providing an answer to everyone's problems. You go from the answer man to God's man. You'll hear yourself saying things like, I don't have the answer to that, but I walk with you through this. Okay. Folks, that is a statement that will earn you more credibility with a friend than 1,000 solutions. Isn't that great? I don't have the answer to that, but I'll walk with you through this.
Yep. That's beautiful stuff. He really picked up the idea of validation from me and the idea of boundaries. And he took it and ran with it and wandered into his beautiful world that also was very spiritual.
Yes. Yeah, I skipped a couple pieces where he quotes, I think, the Bible, maybe, possibly, or the New Testament. It's just really nice. But how easy, especially in our professions, how easy it is to jump to the solution. And I am so guilty of that. I'm a solution girl.
Yeah. And I was taught that, too. I was taught to be the solution person and the problem solver. And my wife would come home, and she used to have... I learned that she had two modes. One is where she's approaching me and looking for a solution. And another mode where she's approaching me and looking for an ear who will listen to her.
Yeah. And I think women do that a lot. They will want a vent, and they don't necessarily want to be fixed. Oftentimes, we just want to be heard.
And what I was surprised was that she knows which is which. And she would say, I've got a real problem. And I say, well, is this a listening time or is this a solving time? And she always knew.
Oh, that's a great question to ask.
She always knew. And she would say, this is a listening time. And I say, and I would just kick off into mirroring and say, I can do that. And I would turn off my problem solving side, realizing that the way to help her solve her problem is to listen to her at this point. And other times.
Well, that's excellent. Partnership, I think, when someone knows enough to ask that question and the other person knows well enough to answer that question. I mean, that right there can solve a lot of evenings, can save a lot of evenings.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, my experience is boys are often raised to think that they will be valued if they solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, their partner lays out a problem in front of them and doesn't want a solution. And then we jump in and give a solution and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, she just wants to be heard.
So the first thing is to make them feel heard and then invite them to say more about it. Say more about that.
Yeah, until we're empty.
Because you're really, people want to be known. They want to come out of the dark and out of the strange world and come into a community where they're feeling heard and eventually feeling understood all the time.
Yeah.
They want that. Everyone wants that. That's part of vintage love. Where you just go from understanding to understanding to understanding. And literally, the rarity is that you don't feel understood. It's like that hardly ever happens, but it might happen for 10 minutes, but then after that it will happen. And what conversation looks like, it's beautiful what a conversation looks like. I often think we should have a camera crew that would follow Sandra and I around sometime.
That's an idea. We can start the Turtle Reality Show.
And what it looks like is that I interview her. It's almost as though I hold up a microphone to her. And I do a good job of interviewing her when she says, boy, you are a prick. And I just say, okay.
Tell me more about that.
Tell me a lot more about that. You got into a place of thinking I'm a prick. They'll tell me a lot more. And it looks like I'm holding a microphone in front of her. And I'm just inviting her to continue until she says, that's all I have to say on that. And then... I say, okay, it's my turn. And it looks like, and I'm saying it would look like from a distance, if you couldn't hear the conversation, I think it would look like this, that she holds up a microphone in front of me and says, now what do you think now that you've heard me? And it looks like we're interviewing each other one after the other, all the way, all day long, 24/7, when we're together.
And so what you're saying here, which is also a great segue into next week's show, is that in vintage love, there will be time when Sandra will come to you and say, hey, Al, I think you're a prick.
Yep.
So that's a good piece of information to have, because it dispels a lot of myths that might say that when we're in vintage love, we're always telling each other how wonderful we are, and nothing ever, there's no snags, and it's all so easy. And that's not the case.
Yeah, no, not the case at all. It's really more about interviewing where she got to and where I got to. You know?
So you guys who are listening, please pay really close attention to this, because it's easy to get lured into the idea that once you know all these skills and you have the subconscious part and the lizard and the reliable membership, and by the time you get all this done and down, you end up in a place where it's like Doris Day singing in the background all day long, and there's nothing but joy and ease. And as you just heard, it's not the case. And that makes me feel good, too, to hear that. It's not the case. It's just that things get addressed in a different way.
Sure.
And
It does look like, yeah. It's kind of like you've gotten to know almost everything about your partner, so what you're looking for is the surprises of things you don't know about. And when the surprise comes up, you start interviewing your partner so that you learn that material.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, let me give you an example of that. We've been pondering a reaction I have. A reaction I have when somebody, it happened on Monday. I was on a phone, last Monday, I was on a phone call with people. And there were 10 people on the phone call. And I would speak up. And nobody, there was a silence, and I would speak up, and nobody acknowledged me.
Hmm.
They went on talking. And it happened 5-6 times. What I didn't know is that my microphone was broken.
There you go. I was thinking there was something like that.
So I went and jumped to the conclusion, and I've done this many times, that they don't want me to ever talk.
Oh, gosh. Isn't that so deep?
I jumped to that conclusion many, many, many times, that people don't want to hear me, that they want me, actually, and Sandra would say, why does that bother you so much? And I would say, well, it sure does bother me, but let's see why. It's bothered me all my life. And she'd say, all your life? My goodness, then whatever we're looking for is back when you first were born. And I often think of that story of that I was a little boy that yelled when I was born and nobody yelled back.
Hmm.
Now, the truth is, that we've gotten more close on it, is that I was born on March 28, 1942, about 4 months after Pearl Harbor.
Oh, my goodness, Al, that's amazing. Oh, shoot, they're going to cut us off the air here. Just as you said, you are serious.
So my mother heard Pearl Harbor while I was in the womb, and she didn't want a baby at that point, and I picked it up. And so here I have years and years later, and when in doubt, Al will think that nobody wants him, that they all want him dead. Because that's what happened when I was in the womb.
Oh, man. We're all so fragile and
so
wonderful.
Cool.
That way.
So cool.
And you know, they're going to kick us off the air here. So
yeah,
we have
they will.
To
okay.
Sorry. But we'll talk next week. Is Sandra going to join us?
I don't know. I can't control her. I've been trying for years.
Well, see, she's just for this one time.
I'll try.
We'll meet you all, you guys, next Tuesday at noon. This is going to be our final episode on vintage love, and I'm hoping that Sandra will join us and talk about vintage love. Oh, please, come on. Do I need to ask her?
Well, no, I'll ask her for you.
Okay.
You can call her and try to if you want.
I might have to do that.
Joe, go ahead and do it.
Okay. All right, you guys. You have a great week. Go do some mirroring and practice, and we'll see you next Tuesday, okay? Bye, Al.
Bye-bye.
Bye.